I want to turn this morning to Joshua chapter 3. I ask that the Lord would be our helper as we look at a portion of His Word together today. When it came time for the children of Israel to finally leave the Sinai wilderness desert that they had wandered around in circles in for 40 years because of disobedience, I mean, you might remember God wanted to bring them right on in to the land of Canaan, but you remember when they sent the spies and they came back and had such an evil and discouraging report that the people were convinced that they could not go in, and they were very disobedient, and God caused them to not go into Canaan's land, and they wandered for 40 years until Moses died. You might even remember that not only could the children of Israel not go into Canaan's land because of disobedience, but their leader, Moses himself, was not able to go into Canaan's land for the very same reason. He disobeyed God when God said to speak to the rock for the water to come out. Moses smote the rock. And because of his blatant disobedience to God, God said, "You're not going in to Canaan's land." Now, he brought Moses on top of Mount Nebo and allowed him to look across the Jordan River and to see the land, but Moses did not set foot into Canaan's land. And he died there in the land of Moab, and the Lord buried him in a valley, and no man knows where his body is to this day except the Lord. Moses has passed away, and it's time for the children of Israel to go into Canaan's land. And now their leader, the baton, has passed from Moses to Moses' servant named Joshua, a younger man. And you might remember, I think a few years ago, I tried to speak on the subject of the passing the baton, so to speak, from one generation of believers and churchgoers along to the next generation of believers and churchgoers. And the Lord's church is being entrusted to us as stewards in the passing of that baton to the next generation. That's a very important subject. And I may very well want to go back and look at that subject again in the not too distant future because it is so important. But here, Moses has grown old and he has passed away. His time came to an end. And now Joshua's taken over. And the Lord does not leave Joshua unequipped to be able to do the job. In Joshua chapter 1, I know I said I'm going to start in chapter 3, but I've just backed up for chapter 1 just for a second. These are some of the things that the Lord tells Joshua. God spoke to him and he told him, he says, "As I was with Moses," in verse 5, "so will I be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee." Joshua, I will be with you just like I was with Moses. God tells him three times here, and within three or four verses, God tells Joshua three times, "Be strong and of a good courage. Have strength. Be strong. Don't be weak and don't be feeble and don't be scared, but be strong and have good courage." He says, "Because I'm going to be with you." And he says, "That thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest." That's what God actually said to Joshua. Be strong and courageous that you may do everything according to the law that Moses commanded, and that you not turn to the right nor turn to the left from the law, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. And this is important. And he told Joshua, he said in verse 8, "This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then shalt thou make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success." I bet you didn't know this morning that God had a prosperity gospel, did you? You didn't realize God had a prosperity message for Joshua and for his people, but he does. God does have a prosperity message for his people. It's about obeying his word, studying his word, meditating and thinking about his word, that we may have good success and that we may prosper. Now, I'll just tell you this. I'll tell you God's definition of good success and prosperity is going to be a lot different than what this world out here says it is. The world in which we live, their definition of prosperity is to have a lot of money and a whole lot of material goods. And there's a lot of prosperity gospel being preached in a lot of the so-called churches of the world today. But God does have a prosperity message for his people. He told Joshua twice. He says, you keep my word and you meditate in it day and night that you may keep it and understand and follow it, that you may prosper and have good success. I will say this morning. It has been my finding in life and my experience in life that the more that I have tried to read God's word and the more that I try to follow God and let him lead in my life, it's amazing how many things seem to go well in life. Not trouble-free, not trouble-free at all, but I'm telling you, some of the main things in life and the very important milestones in life, it's amazing how God blesses his people when we obey him. There is blessings to be had in obedience, and I believe these scriptures prove that. I believe they back it up. There are blessings to be had. But I'll tell you, if God would have spoke to me like he spoke to Joshua, and he would have given me that kind of encouragement, and he would have told me three times to be strong and to be very courageous because I'm going to be with you and I'll never forsake you, I'll tell you what, friends, I'd have been charged up. I'd have been ready to go. I'm like, come on, let's go right now. But God encouraged Joshua, and as he took the baton, and now he's ready to lead. It's time for the children of Israel to go in. And in chapter 3, it's time for them. They've come up to the edge of Moab. They've come to the Jordan River, to the banks of it there. And now it's time to cross the river and to go into the promised land. I'm talking about the promised land that God promised Abraham many, many years and generations before. He promised Abraham a country, and that he promised that he would build of him a people and a nation. And God has done that, and God is in the business of keeping his word. Joshua rose early in the morning, and they removed from Shittim and came to Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and they lodged there before they passed over. And it said, it came to pass after 3 days that the officers went through the host, and they commanded the people, saying, when you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, and the priest, the Levites bearing it, then ye shall remove from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Come not near unto it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for ye have not passed this way heretofore. How about that? Isn't that interesting, that little bit of instruction that the Israelites received? It's time to go into Canaan's land. They have been in the desert for 40 years. Back at the time when the 12 spies Moses sent in to Canaan's land and 10 of the 12 came back with an evil report, God said, that's fine. He says, just stay in the desert for about 40 years. And he says, everybody that's 20 years old and up will die before the rest of you go into Canaan's land. And that's what happened. They'd been in the desert for 40 years. But now it's time to go in. How about this little bit of instruction when it's time to go in? The instruction that came to the people is, you are going to wait until the Ark of the Covenant moves. You're not going to just assemble up yourselves and make your own plan and your own formations and move under your own will, you're going to sit back and you're going to wait until you see the priests that are bearing the Ark of the Covenant on their shoulders. You know, they put the staves in, two on each side, and they would pick it up and carry it on their shoulders. That was a prescribed way. They said, when you see the Ark of the Covenant begin to move, then you will get ready and fall in behind it. And that Ark of the Covenant is just a representation of God being there in the camp with them. That was a visual representation of God there in the camp. So, but did you notice what he said in verse 4? He said, there shall be a space between you and it of about 2,000 cubits by measure. Well, if you do the math on that, a cubit is somewhere between 18 and 20 inches, a Bible cubit. I always just use 18 because it's easy to estimate with a foot and a half. If you do the math there, that works out to about 3,000 feet. Well, that's a little more than a half a mile. That's a long ways that the people are going to walk behind the Ark of the Covenant. It's 0.57 hundredths of a mile. So the people are going to wait, and the Ark of the Covenant's going to move out, and then they don't jump right in behind it. They wait, and they let this thing get just a little bit more than a half a mile away. Then they get in behind it and they begin to follow. What an unusual piece of information, though, for the Israelites to receive about traveling. Really, a half a mile behind? They're behind God. Now, keep it in mind, it's the representation of God as this Ark of the Covenant. Why is that? He tells you. He says, that you may know the way by which you must go. For you have not passed this way before. Now I think about that. And I think about what is the significance of that. You know, I think about the children of Israel. They've been wandering in the desert. They've been over there in the land of Moab, which is never blessed at all in the Bible. And it's time to go into the land flowing with milk and honey, the Canaan's land that God had promised. But they have never been there. They've never crossed the River Jordan, as far as I know, in this capacity that they're about to. And God says, you just stay back. The instruction comes to them, you stay well back and you watch the Ark of the Covenant. Why? So you'll know which way to go. You won't make any wrong turns and you won't outrun God. Now, isn't that important? You know what my experience in life has been? I have come to numerous stations in life that I have never been to before. And so have many of you. I guarantee you this morning, Brother Tony and Sister Myra, Sister Jenna, and Brother Caleb, the Baker family, haven't you come to a station in life back in January of this year, you've never been to before? When Brother Tony had his stroke, of course you did. You've never been there. Sister April, about 2 years ago, she began to have some health issues, and now she's in a spot she's never been before. Her and Brother Carol, you've never been to this exact station in life before. It's all new to you. We could just go on and on and on. Every single one of us here could talk about some place in life we have come to or we may be coming to tomorrow and just don't know it yet. But what is the significance of this? I think it is, in my humble opinion, I think it is keeping your eyes on the Lord and not outrunning God. Waiting to see what pathways God is going to make for you and I when we come to something new in life. Let's let God lead us through it, but let's not get too hasty and outrun Him. You know, in our exuberance many times, don't we have a tendency to do that? You know, we have an issue come up and, well, I need to pray about this. I've got something that's facing me. I have a challenge. I have a burden, and I need to go to the Lord in prayer. We all know that, and we all try to do that. But don't we sometimes get in a hurry to get the answer, and God hasn't even sent it yet? I'd have to raise my hand if I were to ask, have you ever thought that God was leading you in a direction or maybe giving you an answer about something and it turned out that was not the answer? Has that ever happened to you? I'd have to raise my hand. I've done it a couple times. You know what I think I did wrong? I think I was too hasty. I think in my exuberance and my zeal to get the problem solved and to want the answer, I got a little bit too hasty and I outran God. And guess what? I took a wrong turn. I'll tell you, the Lord saved me a couple times from buying a home out in the middle of nowhere. I had no business buying, and I thought that's what I needed to do. It was a huge mistake. I am so thankful God stopped it. He intervened in a kind of a miraculous way, but that's another story. But thank God that I didn't make that mistake. But life is unpredictable. If it's one thing I've ever learned about life, is that how unpredictable it is. Beloved, you cannot predict life. That is a truth. That is a Bible truth. You cannot predict life. Too many things come up in life. And really, I think it's a blessing. In many ways, I think it's a blessing that God doesn't let us know everything that's going to happen tomorrow. And everything's going to happen the next week and the next year. Because I think if we did, I think there's too much of the, like that old country song said, we would miss the dance of life. You'd miss part of the dance of life if you knew all these things that were coming. God knows what He's doing. He always does. He knows exactly what He's doing. But for you and I, life is oftentimes very unpredictable. And the stations that we come to are very unanticipated in life. We need to have all eyes on God. And you know what we need to have above all things? Patience. Patience, patience, patience. That's what we need. You think location is important in real estate. How about patience being important in life? If you're going to follow God, we need patience. You know, if you're half a mile behind the Ark of the Covenant and the priest and the Ark of the Covenant make a turn, you're going to see it long before you get there. You're going to be ready for it. You'll know the pathway that they followed. If they come to a section of ground that's unsuitable to walk over and they need to detour around that, you will see. You'll follow their path. You can probably follow their footprints over in that part of the world. And you won't get turned around. You won't make a wrong turn. I just thought that was so interesting. How about you file in a half a mile behind the Ark of the Covenant, and then you carefully follow the Lord? It seems like there's a lot of principles there that would apply to our lives, if you ask me. David said in Psalms 143, he said, "Cause me to hear thy loving kindness in the morning." I would love to hear the loving kindness from the Lord that David was speaking of. I'm not sure what it would sound like, but he says, cause me to hear it. Hear the loving kindness from God in the morning. For in thee do I trust. And David says, cause me to know the way wherein I should walk, for I lift up my soul unto thee. I tell you, beloved, I believe that's a prayer of every single one of us this morning together. That's a collective prayer that you and I can have, is that the Lord would cause us to know the way in which we should walk. How important is that? When they got to the river Jordan, in verse 15, as they that bear the ark were come unto Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the ark were dipped in the brim of the water, and then in parentheses it says that the Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of harvest. It was a flood time for the River Jordan. I looked at some images this week of the River Jordan. There's a lot of them available online. And there are many places where the River Jordan is really not all that wide. But a lot of articles that I read said that during flood season, it was possible that this thing could be very wide in certain areas, wherever they crossed. And it says that the waters which came down from above, it says they stood and they rose up upon a heap very far from the city Adam that is beside Zaratan, and those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. And the priests that bare the ark of the covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan, and all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. I thought it's pretty interesting, first of all, how God led them to the River Jordan. Let the ark, the representative of God's presence, let it get well out in front so you don't get turned around or get lost. You watch where God goes, then you follow. And then the next thing is when they come to the river, it said that the priests that were bearing the ark, they walked up to the edge of the river. And this was different now. You know, when they got to the Red Sea, this was about 40-something years ago, when they got to the Red Sea, when they were coming out of Egypt. And what did God do? God parted the Red Sea, and they all went across on dry ground. But this time's a little different. The River Jordan did not part until the priest walked into the water first. And I just think there's a little bit of significance there that the priest had to take action. They had to go down into the water first before things began to happen. And then the water began to divide itself, and it began to pile up in a big wall of water as the river was flowing, began to be stopped. And I read a couple of articles that said that town of Adam, that was a little city of Adam next to Zaratan, they said that's about 20 miles away from where they think is the most likely place that they probably crossed the Jordan River, right next to Jericho. So that water stacked up a long way, and then it says that the priest stood there on dry ground as all the people crossed. Now, I don't know about any of you. Have you ever seen a pond that's been drained? Have you ever seen someone drain a little farm pond, cut the levee and let all the water out? Can you imagine if you'd have walked into there right after the water had drained out, how muddy it would be? Can you imagine if God just simply parted the water, if he just made a way and he just stacked up the water and everybody tried to cross there? Can you imagine what a muddy mess that would have been? But God didn't stop there. When God makes a pathway for his people to go across, you know what he does? He makes it a good, dry walking pathway where you can easily walk across there. Look, for all I know, the animals that they had and the people walking across, they may have been kicking up a little dust as they walked across the Jordan River. But it says those priests stood there in the midst of the river on dry ground. Now, this is just another miracle that God has done for his people. Now, it would have been quite an event for the whole nation of Israel to try to cross the Jordan River without God's divine intervention. Now, I'm sure they could have figured out how to do it. It would have been a whole lot more difficult. But God is intervening here. By the way, there are some people there in the nation of Israel that are crossing the Jordan River. There are some people there that crossed the Red Sea years ago. You remember they crossed the Red Sea, and then right after that is when God said, okay, you're going to stay in the desert, and everybody 20 years old and up died. But those people that were under the age of 20, teenagers and children, they went through the Red Sea, and some of them are still alive, and now they're going over the River Jordan. So this is the second miracle. And plus those young ones, some of those that might have been teenagers, they saw all the miracles that God did in the land of Egypt as well. All the plagues that he brought on Pharaoh, they saw the Red Sea open, and now they're seeing another miracle. And so here they come into the water. Isn't it interesting that God didn't just stop the water from flowing and open it up first. The priest had to walk down in the water. What this is now, this is a picture of going into Canaan's land. That's what, physically, that's what they're doing. They're going into Canaan's land. And I've heard some folks kind of make a little bit of a comparison through the years of God's children coming into the Lord's church, which is a Canaan's land of a type and of a sort here in this world. Have you ever heard to the church referred to as Canaan's land? I have many times. But I've heard some people make the comparison saying that the way that you come into the church is through the water, through the baptismal water. But isn't it interesting to note here that nothing significant happened until the feet went into the water first? I have a very good friend who is a minister, and a few years back, he began to feel the call. A church had called him in another state from which he lived in. Church had called him to pastor, and I believe he began feeling the burden to accept that church. But he had a good job. He had a very good job where he was living. And he had a family. He had four children. And he began looking for a job in the area where the church was that called him in a different state. And he looked and he looked and he looked and he couldn't find anything. And he looked some more. And a year went by. Over a year went by and he could not find a job. And he's not moved and accepted the church yet. But yet this burden never went away. And I believe somewhere along the line, I know my friend, he is such a good man, such a beloved man. He could be my pastor. I'll tell you, he's that good. He began to seek counsel from other ministers and wise people. And somebody suggested, you know what? God might be testing you. You may have to move. You may have to give up your good job and move up there before something ever happens. I believe he began to think about that, and through much prayer, that's exactly what he did. He finally gave up the job, and he moved up there, bought a rental home and everything. He wasn't there more than 1 or 2 weeks before he got a job. And then it wasn't very long after that he got a whole lot better job. And he moved, he got an outstanding job. And he's doing very, very well at that church. And what a great story. It made me think about this, though, about how you have to sometimes walk into the water before good things begin to happen. There's a lot of the Lord's little children that have yet to wade through the baptismal waters and enter into Canaan's land. But I'll tell you, from everything I've seen and everything I've learned in the Bible, good things happen when we have faith and we trust in God and we go through the water and God makes a way. What a good picture there. They all crossed. And then in chapter 4, I love this. Here's another significant thing that happened during this crossing. It came to pass when all the people were clean passed over Jordan that the Lord spake unto Joshua. Here's God speaking again. He tells him, you go and you take 12 men out of the people, out of every tribe, a man. And I'll tell you, just for time's sake, I'm just going to paraphrase. You can go down through here and read this. God told Joshua, you get a man from every tribe and you get them to go out there near where the priest is standing out of the middle of the riverbed and they're standing on dry ground. Get them to pick up a stone. Each man picks up a stone. He'll carry it on his shoulder and you take it over to the other side. And you place the stones there on the side of Gilgal and Jericho where they crossed over to. He says, you take those stones and you pile them up there and you place them there. And then the priest and the Ark of the Covenant will come on out and the water's going to close back again. He says, but you do these stones. And Joshua said to do that. And he says in verse 6 in chapter 4 that this may be a sign among you that when your children ask the fathers in time to come, saying, what mean ye these stones? That you'll answer them, that the waters of Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it passed over Jordan. The waters of Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be a memorial unto the children of Israel forever. God told Joshua to make a memorial, to get some stones out of the riverbed that had heretofore had been underneath the water. Take some stones, you bring them out to the place where you crossed over and you came out of the water, and you place them there and you make a memorial unto me. And the reason that God wanted him to do that was that when the children in years and in days after that and in years after that, anytime someone who wasn't there came by and they saw these stones and they didn't know what they meant, it would stimulate them to ask a question. What mean ye these stones? Why are they here? What do they mean? What do they stand for? And then you can tell them about the great miracle that God did with the crossing of the River Jordan, how he parted the waters and his people went across on dry ground. I like the fact that God likes memorials like that. I just believe those are so important. I have a great suspicion that for many years, the children of Israel, whenever some of the Israelites and families would pass by those stones again right there next to Jericho and Gilgal, and when those young ones would see that and they would ask, why are these stones here? What do they mean? And hopefully there were some adults there that could give them the right answer. You husbands and wives that are here today, I hope that you're placing some stones along life's way in your life for your children to see. I hope that you're placing some stones along the way that your children can see and take note of and say, this is how we live our life. This is how we follow God. This is how we reverence God and worship Him and respect God. This is how we live our life by honesty, and we work hard, and then we worship, we play, and then we worship, and we always put God first in our life. Everything we do as parents, our children are watching us closely. Sometimes you don't even realize they're watching you when they're very little, but they are watching you. They're watching us. I hope that every parent here can place some kind of little stones of memorial along life's way that their children can take note of to help them be on a good pathway for life, that they might have good success and be prosperous. I hope you're doing that as parents. It's very incumbent on us as parents that we try to do that with our children, that we raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Very important. But also, I hope we as a church family are placing some stones along the way that our children coming up here in the house of the Lord and in the Anger Church family, I hope can come along and see some stones here that mean something to them. And they will have some stones of remembrance. I think about myself and my journey through church and my Christian journey through life. I think about all of the good meetings that I've been through in years past. I think of so many good meetings, some during the week, some at night during the week, some three-day meetings on the weekend, here, there, and everywhere, and probably a dozen or more states that I've been blessed to travel to and attend meetings. I have so many stones in my memory bank that I can draw on, and they were all good memories. I hope that we're placing down some stones here in Anger Church that when we're gone, when we've passed on, when we have come to the end of our days as Moses did, and it's time to hand the baton over to the younger ones, I hope they have a lot of stones of remembrance of good meetings gone by and the way the church conducted herself, the way we learned to come in and out among the Lord's people and how we learned to worship the Lord and reverence Him properly and give Him all of the accolades that He so richly desires and adoration. I hope that we're doing that as a church. I hope that little ones are, that these stones are making a mental impression in their hearts as we go by day to day and year to year here at Andrew Church. You know that right at the end of this chapter 4, that last verse, I'll start in verse 23. Joshua said, "The Lord your God dried up the waters of Jordan from before you until you were passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, and that you might fear the Lord your God forever." Stones of memorial, a little reminder, a little visual cue, a little visual reminder along the way of what God has done for you and I. How important is that? I really love that fact that God told Joshua to do that. Get those priests to go down near the priest and pick up those stones. And once again, it wasn't anything that man built with his hands, was it? He didn't say, "Go build me a very elaborate and beautiful building by taking stones out of a quarry and cutting them and using hewn stones." Wasn't that at all. You go down in the river and you find some natural stones that God made. Bring those out and you set those up, and that's the memorial that we'll use. So many good thoughts in that story. I hope you'll think about the crossing of the Israelites and that nation coming into Canaan's land, and how God had fulfilled a promise that he had made to Abraham many, many years ago. And also the fact of how God, when Moses passed off the scene, how God encouraged Joshua. He said he would be a God to him. He would always hold him up. He would never leave him, never forsake him. He said the people would respect you just like they did Moses. And God always holds up his end of the bargain. I believe God has given us those same promises today. When we look to him and we respect him and we put him first in our life, God has promised to bless us in so many ways. I hope that we all get to experience that very thing. May God bless and keep you.